You've been listening to the Afternoon Sound Alternative on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. It's 3 p.m. on Friday, which means here on KGNU is Metro Arts.
This program is brought to you by the Boulder Jewish Community Center, providing specialty day camps with cultural, nutritional, and performing art themes. Preschool camps are also available. Registration and information available at boulderjcc.org.
Support comes from the Boulder County Arts Alliance, presenting Art at Riverbend on Sunday, August 25th in Lyons. Art at Riverbend is a collaboration between the Boulder County Arts Alliance and the Lyons Arts and Humanities Commission, showcasing dozens of artists in all mediums, including painting, photography, pottery, jewelry, and more. More information at bouldercountyarts.org.
And welcome to Metro Arts. I'm your host, Veronica Straitlingo. We've got a great show for you today. Coming up this weekend in Niwot, a community mosaic mural project is working on what will ultimately be a piece of art that'll be displayed permanently on the site of Niwot Market. KGNU's Maeve Conran will bring us a report. We'll also feature a new segment of After Image with Boulder Weekly film critic Michael Casey. This week, Michael Casey talks about After the Wedding, The Chambermaid, and we discuss the return of the International Film Series on the CU Boulder campus. All that plus the Metro Arts calendar coming up, but first... Author Cassie Kircher will be at the Tattered Cover on August 26th. She'll be reading from her recent book of essays called Far Flung. The essays recount stories of her experience as a park ranger, among other things. KGNU's Ginger Perry sat down with Cassie Kircher to find out more.
This is Ginger Perry. And I'm here with Cassandra Kircher, Cassie, who has just written a book. We'll let her tell you the title. And she'll be doing a reading at Tattered Cover in Lodo in Denver on August 26th at 7 o'clock. Welcome, Cassie.
Thanks, Ginger. And thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah, this is quite a title. I wanted you to read the title for us of your book.
It's Far Flung. Subtitle, Improvisations on National Parks. Driving to Russia, Not Marrying a Ranger, The Language of Heartbreak, and Other Natural Disasters.
Yeah, that gets at how diverse the book is. It takes place in Russia, Alaska, rural Wisconsin, and Oxford, England. And it's quite a collection, 13 essays, personal essays that you've written in which you make yourself very vulnerable. I wondered how long it took you to write that book.
I'm almost afraid to admit this, but the first essay, the oldest essay, was written 25 years ago. But most of the essays have been written in the last 10 years. So I teach full time and I write essays whenever I can squeeze in any amount of time. And it took me a while to A, write the essays that are in this collection, and B, decide which essays actually belonged in this collection of all the essays that I've been writing over the past 25 years.
And a lot of them take place in Colorado when you were a park ranger here at Rocky Mountain National Park. How did you decide to become a park ranger, and how was that experience for you?
You know, I think I didn't decide to become a park ranger. The park ranger world decided that I could become a park ranger. So I filled out an application and I was chosen. I felt like I won the lottery when I was called and told that I could be a ranger. And my first assignment was to work the entrance gates. If you've been to a national park, you know that you often, back in the days when I started, you had to pay $2 to pay. But I have a line in my book that goes something like, I've always been park ranger material. I think that my experiences when I was a kid going to national parks with my family, my father in particular was a fan, and also my experiences hanging out in rural Nebraska and rural Wisconsin sort of drew me to the natural world.
Yeah, there's some beautiful descriptions of nature in there. And there's, of course, the subject of your father, a complicated relationship and a complicated and mysterious man running through the essays. I just wondered, how did your family react to these essays, particularly your mother? You've got a lot of depth and personal intensity in your discussion of your relationship with your father.
My mother sort of knew I was writing essays, and then I told her about the whole collection, and I told her that my father, her husband, figured in the collection as what I call him in the book, a difficult man. And I worried about that. She read the book, she read it again, and much to my surprise, the part of the book that bothered her the most was when I described myself as an infant being stung by 13 wasps. And she was very worried because I said I was 6 months old when that happened. And she said, no, you were 18 months old. You weren't 6 months. And that was what actually disturbed her the most. The information about my father, she was very thoughtful about. And she said, I think you depicted some of this as I remember it. You depicted things I don't remember. I saw some things differently. But she wasn't offended. She sort of gave her blessing to the book and, was not afraid to have it out in the world.
Yeah, you have a lot of different subjects in your essays, failed romance, death, even a grizzly bear, fabulous natural descriptions. Iditarod? What do you call that?
The Iditarod. It's the big dog sled race up in Alaska that's held every year. So, yes, I do have one essay about someone who won that contest at some point in time about 20 years ago.
Right. What do you hope people take away from reading your essays?
I think one thing I hope they take away that is not explicitly talked about is that place matters in our life and nature matters in our life. And that loving a place can matter. And I think my love for the mountains was something that came through in the first part of the book. And in the second part of the book, as I went to other places, that love that I'd internalized about the Colorado Rockies in particular came into play when I went to other places as far-flung as England, for example.
Far-flung, the title of the collection of essays. I'd like to finish with having you read just a paragraph here from the book that I think resonates with the whole book, starting with that finally.
Finally, looking at him sitting there in the middle of the black night, I am okay with offering my daughter this gift of camping myself, this gift which neither one of them might like in the end. This gift that only one parent picked out for them, although the other submitted to the routine of outdoor living more than once to please me. I am okay with knowing that camping is my love, one that strengthened me and my idea of who I am and how I move in the world, and that not everyone feels content living with trees, or for that matter, dying as part of the natural cycle of life.
That's great. That's from Farflung. Cassie Kirscher here, who will be reading at Lodo, Tattered Cover, on August 26. This is Ginger Perry for KGNU.
And thanks so much to KGNU's Ginger Perry for that report. Once again, Cassie Kirscher will be at the Lodo Tattered Cover on the 26th at 7 p.m. You're listening to Metro Arts on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. We'll be back after this.
Why don't we paint the town? And all that jazz, I'm gonna rouge my knees and roll my stockings down. And all that jazz, start the car. I know a whoopee spot where the gin is cold, but the piano's hot. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl. And all that jazz. Father Dip is gonna blow the blues. And all that jazz, hold on, hon, we're gonna bunny hug. I bought some aspirin down at United Drug in case you shake a part and want a brand new start to do that jazz. Skidoo. And all that jazz.
Hacha.
Whoopee. And all that jazz. It's just a noisy hall where there's a nightly brawl and all that jazz.
Listen, your husband ain't home, is he?
No, her husband is not at home.
Find a flask, we're playing fast and loose.
And all that jazz!
Right up here is where I store the juice.
And all that jazz!
Come on, babe, we're gonna brush the sky. I bet your lucky Lindy never flew so high. 'Cause in the stratosphere, how could he lend an ear to all that jazz?
You're listening to the song All That Jazz from the musical Chicago. And this is the last weekend you can catch Family Theater production, Family Theater's production of this sultry classic. Shows are tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 and Sunday at 2 at the Studio Loft in the Ellie Calkins Opera House. For more information and tickets, you can go to family.org. Now that's spelled PHAMALY.org. And welcome back to Metro Arts. This weekend in Niwot, a community mosaic mural project is working on what will ultimately be a piece of art that'll be displayed permanently on the side of Niwot Market. KGNU's Maeve Conran went along to find out more.
My name's Laurel True, and I have a company called True Mosaic Studio and an organization called the Global Mosaic Project. Well, I came to Niwot to teach a mosaic mural making intensive. I was hosted by two people who live in the area, and they asked me to come and facilitate a mosaic mural making workshop here and do a mural on the side of the Niwot Market. The workshop started on Wednesday, and so on Wednesday, we started working on the mural. We took the design and I gave some instruction to the students. It's a professional development level class, so many of the students have had previous experience. So on Wednesday, we started kind of doing the pre-planning and the pre-stuff that had to do with just getting everything ready and organized. I did a bunch of lessons. And then today, Thursday, and tomorrow, Friday, we'll be doing all the piecework. And then on Saturday, we'll be installing, and Sunday, we'll be grouting. So it's a five-day workshop.
And then this will ultimately be displayed here in Niwot?
Yeah, it's a permanent installation. It's going to go on the side of the building.
You're working in mosaics, you're working in murals. Both of those traditions have very deep roots in different cultures around the world, and of course, and you work globally as well. Let's talk about mosaics first and why that is something that you work in. What's the significance, maybe some of the history of mosaics?
Well, I was first attracted to using mosaic as a medium before I was even really called it mosaic. I had certainly seen classical mosaics done, but what really got me into doing mosaics is seeing someone's work who did a very contemporary style. This man's name is Isaiah Zagar. He was a street artist working in mosaic in Philadelphia, and I was on a trip and I saw his work, and he was working on a really monumental scale. It was huge, huge stuff. It was really impacting his neighborhood and the environment around, and I thought, oh God, I gotta learn how to do that. So I did an apprenticeship in the very early 90s and kept going doing pretty large scale work. And so in terms of why I was drawn to mosaic, I love the piecework. And there's a lot of great metaphors that come with the mosaic process, bringing order out of chaos and, you know, putting the pieces together. It's also a very cohesive medium, and it's a very accessible medium to share with other people. So I started doing community-based work pretty early on because I think that just the process of co-creation is a really, really strong, impactful thing. And I think it's a good thing for communities. It really benefits individuals. Even people who don't have experience, they can come and see something that they actually built and contributed to. And I think that really does a lot for not only creative placemaking, but community building and also economic development, community development. It really operates on a lot of levels. I think that neighborhood beautification is a social justice issue, and I think well-being is also a social justice issue. And I think that just the nature of co-creating something and leaving something beautiful behind, I think it's a really powerful thing.
What does this type of project bring to this kind of community?
I think it brings more visibility. Also, I know that NYWAD is a community that is focusing a little bit more on the arts, and it seems like it's a small town, and I think the more exciting things that are going on in a place can really benefit a town, both on cultural and economic levels. It can just kind of raise the energy around things, and so I think in this situation that this mural is gonna bring something cool. Everybody comes to the market. It's a hub already, but there's something about creative placemaking, which means like bringing a piece of art to maybe an unexpected place and having that place be more energized in a certain type of a way. And I love to have this piece become part of like the visual story of NYWAD and be a part of the larger art culture, creative culture.
Tell us a little bit about the design that folks are working on right now. Mm-hmm.
The design is a large radial, like medallion-like design, and in the middle is a design called the Seed of Life, which is based on sacred geometry, which you find in all nature and every culture across the world. And so, to me, the Seed of Life is really—it is a seed, you know. And there's so much potential in a seed, and then you've got all of these, you know, obvious metaphors for growth and generation and things like that. So, I felt like it was a great jumping off point for the design. So
how big a piece then ultimately is it going to be?
Just it's 8 feet in diameter, so it's pretty big.
I'm here.
It's pretty big.
Okay, so this is going to go on the line. Yeah.
The mosaic mural will be on permanent display on the side of the NYWAD Market. You can see photos from the community workshop building the mosaic online at news.kgnu.org. You're listening to Metro Arts on KGNU, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM, and online at kgnu.org. We'll be back in a moment.
Just feel that late summer fire burning up the sky.
It makes time stand still and your brain start to fry.
Though you trade your left hit for a dip in the pool.
Ain't no sense wanting what you can't have, no sense dreaming.
Is this the right side of the tracks?
Is this the wrong side of the tracks?
Well, I'm here to tell you it's neither. So let's lay down the facts that we live this side of the tracks. We live this side of the tracks, where it's hotter than Hades. And in a heat like this, it's hard to
You're listening to the song This Side of the Tracks from the Great American Trailer Park Musical. Equinox Theater Company in Denver is presenting the Great American Trailer Park Musical at the Bug Theater that's in the Highlands of Denver. You can catch it tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30, and the show runs now through August 31st. Get your tickets to this raucous and irreverent musical. Welcome back to Metro Arts. Coming up next is a brand new episode of After Image with Boulder film critic Michael Casey.
Thank you.
Michael Casey, some interesting premieres this weekend, starting with After the Wedding?
Yes, After the Wedding is a English language remake of a 2009 Danish film directed by Susan Beer. This movie is directed by Bart Freudenlich. This is the husband of Julianne Moore, who also stars in the piece. It's a family drama, and it's a very swift-moving family drama. We don't really know how all the players intersect, but we know that they will. Michelle Williams runs an orphanage in India, and she is called back to New York because she needs to meet with this company that's going to donate money. The company is run by Julianne Moore. Julianne Moore's daughter is having a wedding in the next couple of days, so we have to put the talks on how the orphanage will be funded until after. Michelle Williams is invited to the wedding because why not? She gets to the wedding. She finds out that Julianne Moore's husband is her old flame. She also then finds out that the kid that is getting married is not the daughter of Julianne Moore, it's her daughter. And this is dealt with in about the first 20 minutes of the movie. You think that that would be enough for the movie itself, but as the title tells you, it's after the wedding. So a lot of the drama unfolds after we learn these kind of twists. And there are a lot more twists to this movie. It's got a lot of good performances, but there's not a whole lot else. The drama kind of swells and fills up the movie, so there's no real chance for pictorial invention or editorial kind of innovation. It's told very flatly and blandly, but you do get Michelle Williams and Julianne Moore. Billy Crudup plays the husband, and he is serviceable in this role. The daughter's played by Abby Quinn, and she is quite good in the role. It's kind of a weepy movie, so if you're going to go to it, bring some Kleenexes for the last 10 to 20 minutes. But if you're going to expect anything more than what you think you're going to get, you may be disappointed.
So premiering next week at the Derry Arts Center is The Chambermaid.
Yes, The Chambermaid will open next Wednesday and play throughout the weekend. This is an excellent movie. This is from Mexico. This is about the life of a housekeeper. Her name is Eve, and she works in this luxury kind of high-rise hotel. You assume it's in Mexico, but it's a very international hotel. There's a lot of other languages spoken, so it could really be anywhere. But what's really striking about this movie is how it's filmed. It is filmed in 235 anamorphic widescreen, which is a very pictorial landscape kind of way of shooting a movie. You can think of like a Western. You can see, you know, like cowboys riding over the hills. It's not a style that's used very typically in like insular dramas. But what it does is it gives Eve's life kind of this really cinematic quality. It also shows a lot of emptiness in the frame around her. And at first you think that emptiness is kind of this stillness, this quietness, this sense of order that might have some sort of like Zen-like qualities to it. It's a very relaxing movie. It's a very soothing movie to watch. But as the movie goes on, you realize that that emptiness is isolation. It's loneliness. And it really starts to encroach on Eve, who needs some sort of human connection, and she's just not going to get it in this hotel. There's a lot of people that you think are going to give her that connection, but life is cruel sometimes, and they disappear as quickly as they come into it. This movie is kind of similar to last year's Roma, in which it looked at a nanny as kind of the secular saint. Eve, you get that feeling that she is definitely going to suffer for other people, but she has a little bit more shading than the character did in Roma. There's a little bit more of a want and a desire and a little bit more of a feeling of confinement. Everywhere Eve goes, she's constantly surrounded by this overwhelming whiteness, the whiteness of the linens, the whiteness of the sheets, the whiteness of the walls. It's all very sterile. At one point, she does actually leave the hotel and go onto the helipad at the top. And when she looks up, the sky is all just white. It's blotted out from haze and clouds, and she just cannot escape it. You are with her this entire time in the hotel. It is a really enchanting film in a way that isn't magical, but just kind of sucks you in.
And so with the return of students to the CU Boulder campus is the return of the International Film Series. What's coming up for folks to catch?
So we have the new season of the International Film Series. This is once again helmed by programmer Pablo Kajolsev. And we have another slate of just outstanding films. With the usual three pillars of every IFS calendar are there. We have Celebrating Stan, which is Saran John Ganguly's monthly screening of Stan Brakhage experimental films. We have Don Yanesino's screenings of first-person cinema. And of course, we have Pablo's 35mm prints that he either pulls from CU's library or from other archives. Here's a couple that you don't want to miss. The Iron Giant is celebrating its 20th anniversary, and he will screen that on December 8th. Ivy Delone, the great Federico Fellini film about the end of youth, will play on October 15th. And Goodbye Dragon Inn, which is a Taiwanese film about the closing of a movie theater, will play on October 22nd. And there's nothing quite like sitting in a movie theater watching a movie about a movie theater closing. It's kind of like standing between two mirrors and looking off into infinity. But there's a lot of other great stuff there, too. I would definitely like to highlight Tukibuki, which is a Senegalese film from the 1970s. It is a masterpiece. It is unlike anything you've ever going to see. He also has his follow-up of his films, Hyenas, which is a new restoration. It's spectacular. And the whole thing kicks off next Wednesday, August 28th, with Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am, which is a favorite in the room here.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we were having a conversation how this weekend there aren't really just big smash summer releases. That season is kind of over. And for you as like a film critic, what kind of warms your heart, or what do you look forward to after such a huge season of franchise after franchise? And what are you excited about in the fall?
Well, we're going to find out. In a couple of weeks, I will go down to the Telluride Film Festival, which is probably one of the greatest experiences of the cinematic year. And then after that is the Toronto Film Festival and then the New York Film Festival. So now we are going to enter into award season, which has its own kind of ups and downs, just like blockbuster season does. But there's a lot of great stuff coming out. We've got The Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. We've got Judy Garland to be played by Renee Zellweger. We've got the winner of the Palme d'Or this year is a Korean film from Bong Joon-ho, Parasite, that looks fantastic. Hizo Koreeda has got a new film out with Juliette Binoche and Ethan Hawke that should come out sometime this fall. There's a lot of good things coming out. So right now, the summer's winding down. We're in a little bit of a doldrum. So catch up on the stuff that you may have missed. Go ahead and check your local library, see what's up on Netflix and Hulu, and then get ready for a wonderful back end of 2019.
Michael Casey, for more information about you and your reviews, where can people go?
Every Thursday, Boulder Weekly and boulderweekly.com. Follow me on social medias at Michael J. Cinema. I will see you at the movies.
And After Image is a regular feature right here on Metro Arts. This is KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Coming up next, the Metro Arts Calendar. This is the Metro Arts Calendar for the weekend of August 23rd. For more information on these events or to post your own, please go to kgnu.org. The Dairy Arts Center in Boulder and Boulder Comedy Works Entertainment present stand-up comedian Dusty Slay at the Dairy tonight at both 7 and 9 p.m. The Evergreen Players presents Epic Improv at Center Stage Theater in Evergreen starting tonight at 7:30. The Rocky Mountain Revels will hold auditions for their upcoming show, A Shakespearean Christmas, tomorrow starting at 1 p.m. at the Boulder Library, Geo Reynolds Branch. Adult and children ages 7 and up are invited to audition. The Mercury Cafe in Denver will screen the Italian film Mediterranea on Sunday afternoon at 2. Mediterranea explores the transitory lives of the hundreds of thousands of Africans who walk across the Sahara Desert, embark on overcrowded boats, and land in southern European nations, where they encounter a world very different from the glamorous pictures they saw on Facebook. The City of Boulder Office of Arts and Culture is hosting an organizational summit on climate change and how it will impact the arts. This summit will be on Tuesday. Join this cultural summit as nonprofits discuss practical strategies for the future of your organization. RSVP at boulderarts.org. That does it for Metro Arts. Thanks so much for listening. This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Coming up next, The Laura Flanders Show.
What's better than new
support
vinyl?
Comes from
old vinyl, and KGNU will have plenty of old vinyl to choose from when our annual record and CD sale is held on Sunday, September 1st at 700 Calamath Street. unearth forgotten treasures, and explore the dynamic spectrum of the deep, dusty grooves in support of your community radio station, KGNU. That's KGNU's annual record and CD sale, Sunday, September 1st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. See you there.
This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.
Support comes from the Center for Transformative Movement, reminding you that dance is not just something you do at parties, and providing community-based programs like Dance with a Doc on the last Saturday of the month, where you can discuss the benefits of free-form movement with health professionals. More information can be found at cftmove.org. That's cftmove.org.
This program is supported by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Save Home Heat Company, providing professional service and installation of heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical systems, proudly serving the Boulder, Denver area for over 35 years. More information at savehomeheat.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Flanders, and this is the Laura Flanders Show, the TV and radio program that seeks to raise radical spirits by interviewing forward-thinking people with real models of shifting power from the worlds of arts, entrepreneurship, politics, and activism. We talk about the way central banks steer world development, and for whom. Former Goldman Sachs manager Noemi Prinz, author of Collusion, How Central Bankers Rigged the World, and public ownership researcher Thomas Hanna, believe that banking, like development, could be very different. Find out how. We are storming the Federal Reserve this week on the Laura Flanders Show. It's the place where the people who say it can't be done take a back seat to the people who are doing it. Welcome. Problems we talk about on this program are big enough that what we really need is structural, systemic change. Talk about structural change and you think about revolutions. Think about revolutions and you think about, I don't know, people in French caps storming the Bastille. If you were going to storm a central symbol of power and corruption today, where would you go? And what would you do once you got there? It's a thought experiment that Marxist geographer David Harvey posed in a speech I heard this past year, and I've been thinking about it ever since. Here's David.
The difficulty with that is, at a certain point, it doesn't confront the fact that somebody has to go and confront the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the difficulty of the thing these days. And actually, Marx talks about this when he's writing about the financial system. He says, you know, the financial system doesn't involve a conflict between labor and capital. It's really a conflict between different forms of capital. And this then kind of says to you, well, there's a real difficulty of revolution here. I mean, in the French Revolution, they could go storm the Bastille. In the Russian Revolution, they had the Winter Palace. And then you think to yourself, okay, let's go storm the Federal Reserve. And then you say to yourself, what would we do when we got inside of the Federal Reserve?
That was David Harvey. I'm happy to have in studio two guests who may have some answers to his question. Noemi Prinz is a journalist and former Goldman Sachs director, the author of 6 books, the latest being Collusion, How Central Bankers Rigged the World. Thomas Hanna is research director at the Democracy Collaborative and the author of Our Commonwealth, The Return of Public Ownership in the United States. So, as you can tell, that question has been lingering with me ever since I heard David raise it. Is he right? Is it the Fed that we would storm?
Well, what's interesting about what he said is that the Federal Reserve, the actual physical building in Washington, is really removed from the sidewalk. And there's a bunch of policemen in front of it. I was just there on Monday. And it's basically a very austere kind of stay away sort of building. It's the same thing the Bank of England in London and so forth. So there is this sense of
awareness. So it's actually practically not so easy.
It's not. You have to go through much more security measures and like putting your name in books and stuff to get into the Fed than you do.